If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello and welcome to Mainstream by Sifter. My name is Mitch, and thank you for joining us. If this is your very first time listening to the show, welcome. On Mainstream, the team behind sifter.com.au discuss their experiences playing a variety of games, big AAA titles, different smaller micro games and indies, retro releases, and it's all covered here. This week, Gianni and I have been looting and shooting in the latest spin-off of the Borderlands series, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. Hi, Gianni.
Hey, Mitch. I've been having a lot of fun with this game, a game that I haven't touched for a very long time. Last Borderlands game I played was Borderlands 1, so it was interesting to come back to the series.
All right, well, before we get into Tiny Tina's latest homebrew campaign, let's find out what's been making the news in this week's walkthrough.
You're listening to Mainstream by Sifter. Visit us on sifter.com.au.
So those of you familiar with the Borderlands series will be familiar with the looting, shooting, and cel-shaded first-person shooter RPG that has been a hit for almost a decade now, ever since Borderlands 1. And this is the latest version to come out on this generation of gaming hardware, the consoles. Actually, no, this is the first version on the PS5, isn't it? And this generation, actually.
It is.
Right there.
Yeah.
This one is D&D themed, very heavily tabletop RPG themed. But you still get your guns, you still get your grenades. Well, you don't really get grenades, you get spells. But we've been having a good time in it. It's still cel-shaded. It still looks great. And it's still over the top. So nothing is missing in that regard.
But, what I would say is if you have played a Borderlands game before, this is a Borderlands game. Don't get it mixed around. This is 100% a Borderlands game in the way that you actually play it. As you said, Mitch, it's looting, it's shooting. It's that kind of kooky sort of quests and side quests that you end up doing, semi-open world, but moving through different zones, you know, kind of coming across interesting characters as you go along the way. And the main thing you do is you try to improve your gear as you go along. You can level up. There's sort of a real RPG stat sheet as well as part of this game. But, you know, or every time you move into a different area, you're looking to find a better gun, maybe find a better spell, find a better shield, or you know, try to mix up the combination of skills and abilities that you've got in order to work your way through the world. And as you said, it's very tabletop role playing game. And I think what this game does excellently is that it really wears those influences on its sleeve. It is unashamedly tabletop role playing game.
I would love
and that. Really really proud of it too, which is really cool. And in you know, it has elements in it you can tell that people really cared about the playing games with your friends over a tabletop. Like, it's really tries to capture that as much as they can. And I think they do some pretty genuine, honest, you know, depictions of what that's like to play with a bunch of friends. Did you find that, Mitch, as you were playing through?
I found that extremely true. But then I wasn't a stranger to this from Borderlands, because I thought they did it quite, I thought they wholeheartedly bought into that in Dragon's Keep, actually, because there's the whole thing about Tina kind of telling the story and the other characters are kind of just playing the game with her on the tabletop. That is absolutely, like, that was definitely true of Assault on the Dragon's Keep all those years ago, and I'm glad to say that there is just more of that. And, like, this one doubles down even harder on that idea, and love it, yeah.
It's helped a lot by some really quite excellent voice acting in this game. Ashley Birch, of course, reprises the role of Tiny Tina, your bunker master in the game, but it's also got one of your favorite mine. It's got Andy Samberg as one of the characters as well.
Who's Andy Samberg in it? Because I can't tell.
He's the main guy. He's, what's his name? Valentine.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So he's in it. Wanda Sykes is in as a robot called Fret. You've also got the Dragon Lord, who's played by Will Arnett. So, you know, we're talking about...
Yeah, okay. I actually got Will Arnett from the Dragon Lord. The Dragon Lord sounds more like Will Arnett than Andy Samberg sounds like the other main character, but...
Just you wait. There are some extremely Andy Samberg bits in it as you go throughout the game. But yeah, I really think that the way that they kind of depict their relationship as they're sort of playing this game to be really, like, very genuinely funny. And if you're fans of any of those actors, you know, you're going to get what you like from them. They are playing the sort of characters they are in a sort of silly, over-the-top fantasy world and really enjoying it, of course. You know, there's just lots of little moments. One that I particularly liked where... And, you know, if anyone has got experience with playing tabletop games is, you know, the two characters, in the NPC characters, Andy Samberg's character and Wanda Sykes' character, decide that this random NPC in the background is actually this evil bad guy. And they go on off on this massive quest. And, you know, Tina's obviously trying to direct them to the main person. And they said, no, I want to go after this blue hat guy instead. And they go on this massive mission. And she could tell that she's sort of scrambling to make things up as you go along. Let's have a listen to a little bit of that, because it is genuinely one of the funniest moments in that game, filled with lots of these little funny moments that are very self-referential to playing tabletop games.
You there, traveller. I am Merrick, last keeper of the Holocay of Fate. Shadows gather, and the doompocalypse of all worlds is nigh. Only the Chosen One of Prophecy can halt its silent march, and...
Sure, yeah. But what's up with Blue Hat Guy over there?
Oh, he's just some rando. He's totes nobody.
You're awfully insistent about this guy being unimportant.
What are you talking about? This is a completely normal amount of insistence.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's go talk to Blue Hat Guy, see what's really going on here.
What do you mean you... You know what? Fine. But don't forget about Merrick.
Oi, mate. I saw you seeing me. Just came by so you could give me a name.
Blucius. Blucius. I'm Blucius. Blucius Hatley. Just some guy.
Clearly a fake name.
There's something he doesn't want us to know.
What? No! He's just the normal, unsuspicious guy, you dummies!
Time to get down to brazen tacks. We both know you're not who you say you are, so just give it to me straight. What's your endgame?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Leave me alone!
Don't let him get away!
After him!
Don't chase him! Too much running is bad for your sweet little niece, you know?
I will chase this man until my knees are dust if I have to.
Yeah, so as you can hear, it's very clearly, inspired by player characters who go off on their own way, and their dungeon master is just trying to pull together this pre-prepared story and pull them back in the same direction. But sometimes it's fun just to go with it. Now, Mitch, you have played the more recent Borderlands games. You played Borderlands 3. I'm just wondering, where does this sit in your estimation, how you compare this to what they've done with this particular game?
So seeing as how Tina is kind of still a girl, like she's not really like a teenager yet, I'm pretty sure it happens either right after Borderlands 2 or during it. I think that's where it is, like, because the character design, like, she's still a kid, and I think she's hanging out. If you look at the area around her in the parts where she's like, you can see the whole table and she's interacting with her friends, I'm pretty sure that's where she hung out in Borderlands 2. That little cave, essentially, where she was essentially like a homeless person, and she just created bombs for people. And that is, I'm pretty sure, where this is set. Before we move away from from the voice acting, I want to mention Ashley Birch again, because I've been playing another Ashley Birch game, which is Horizon Zero Dawn, and sorry, Horizon Forbidden West, I beg your pardon. And that is definitely a, like, she's got range. Like, I've been listening to her as Aloy, like,
very serious, talking, stoic, serious, heroic, yeah.
And then, powerful, and then Tiny Tina is a lunatic. And I thought, the first game I ever heard Ashley Birch in was Borderlands 2, and I thought she was great.
Definitely agree. Well, I was like, I almost couldn't pick it, depending. Yeah. The characters are so different. The performances are so different. You're like, is this actually the same person? So yeah, as you said, just highlights the range. But yeah, so tell me how you've played the most recent title, which came out, which is Borderlands 3. And, you know, this is, for everything that it does differently to the Borderlands games, it is a Borderlands game. Yes. How did you sort of rate the differences and changes that they've made to the formatting and storytelling in this game?
I think for people asking me, this happened to people ask me the exact same questions between like when Borderlands 3 came out and this. They go, should I play it? And I go, well, did you like Borderlands 2? And they go, well, yes. And then I go, well, yes, it's just more of that. There isn't actually, if you get down to the nuts and bolts of the whole situation, there's actually not much new happening here. You shoot the bad guys, the numbers come out of them, and the bigger number makes that bad guy like go down quicker and stop being a problem. However, that being said, it's still more of that. And if you liked how it felt to shoot people in Borderlands 2, you're going to love it. It is more of the same. I don't think they've tried to reinvent the wheel here. They've kind of just made it look a bit different. And that is not a criticism. That to me, that is a strength. I think Borderlands pretty much invented this kind of looter shooter idea. I think like games like Destiny and to an extent some of the mechanics we find in our much beloved battle royales came from Borderlands. So I really do think that it's more of the same, but it's a comfortable the same.
What I really enjoyed about it it's very easy to get into a very comfortable play style with this game. You don't need to, it's not going to challenge you too much. It is going to be pretty enjoyable. You're moving from place to place. You have to, you know, shoot whoever needs to be shot in this particular the game. But you do have the opportunity to kind of build something that is quite enjoyable. So for me, when I was going through, I built a character that had a lot of traits and stats in Frost, which meant that any enemy that kind of came across me, and I found a really good weapon that particularly helped out with this, any enemy that came across, I would just basically layer upon layer upon layer of effects of Frost, turn them into a giant ice block, and then run up with my melee weapon and basically knock them apart, which is really enjoyable. And I'm curious, what sort of play style did you go for when you were playing the game, Mitch? What sort of things were you leaning towards, or were you still sort of finding your feet?
So I'm only a couple of hours in at this point. So I'm not really at the point where I'm finding anything that really rolls over. I'm playing the Dragon Master character, where you kind of have this like dragon friend, and I don't think I've quite optimized this character just yet. I will say I'm liking a lot of the vampire abilities. I'm just getting anything with a vampire ability because that allows you to life leech off the people you damage, which I desperately need because I'm not very good at the game. I gotta say, though, the choice of console that I have chosen, I'm playing it on PS4, and I don't think that is the best experience for this game. The PS4 is, I think, starting to struggle a little bit with how many particles and like cool effects are on screen. So I think if you have a choice, I would definitely try and play it on your high-end computer or a current generation console. That would be my advice.
Have you got an example of where you noticed that, you know, things was kind of slowing
frame
down?
Frame rate is definitely one thing. The frame rate is very choppy on PS4, which is disappointing because I was playing Horizon Zero Dawn, as I mentioned earlier, and that handle like that on current on previous generation hardware is quite good. and I don't really notice, but you really do notice in Borderlands, and I think, but the Borderlands games have never really been terribly optimized for console, even though that's where I did play them. So I don't know why that is, but they've always struggled a little bit on consoles because of just how intense they are visually.
I guess it's one of these things you have to just sort of work out whether or not, if you've got access to a next-gen console, whether or not you can play it or not, but not everyone can. So, you know, a lot of people are still playing on the older PlayStation 4s, on the Xbox Ones. Maybe they've got a Pro or an Xbox One X sort of make things a bit easier. but if you don't and you're playing on a standard one, we're talking about a console that came out, 10 years ago, 7 years ago? Quite a while now.
I can't believe it's been that long, but yeah, it's pretty old.
Yeah, it's adding up in years. Tell me, was there anything in this game, Mitch, that you, as you were playing through, that kind of surprised you, or moments that you thought were really, sort of challenged your expectations of what you were getting into?
To be honest with you, not yet. I actually think that it's relatively, but keep in mind, I'm only a couple of hours in, so I don't think I have really been challenged quite yet. I think I'm not as the tabletop role-playing games are not as second nature to me as they are to some other people. So understanding like what feats are and things like that, like I had to translate, it took me a while for that to translate into like just video game talk. It's like, oh, okay, that's just an ability, you know, like that kind of thing. That would be my main challenge, but that would be my illiteracy in the medium, I think, in this time around.
I found there were some very funny moments that are really helped by the game existing in the mind of the characters. Things that you can do. You could technically still do this in Borderlands, and you've sort of seen bits and pieces like this before. But there was a very funny moment where Tina is sort of directing the characters through a mission. They were looking for a particular item. They obviously reach a point where she hasn't quite prepared what they need to do. So she goes, "You're getting a sneak attack," and then a whole bunch of enemies race at you. And instead of having the correct names for whatever the enemy class that they are, they are all just called ums and ahs and and all this sort of thing. And I just thought, like, that's very funny. It's like, and I actually have found it to be genuinely very funny in lots of parts. Some of the bits I think are kind of like, still so self-referential to people who've played the Borderlands games in the past. There's some of those main characters that you would know from previous games, like Torque, for example, turns up again and plays a character in this game. And, you know, like, I don't have the familiarity with Torque other than playing, you know, ages and ages
ago.
Everyone's
favorite character.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. And I was like, oh, this guy is very... I don't really get the shtick of what his deal is, which is to be on me. But, you know, because it is enough of a different thing, there's some very, like, genuinely interesting moments, I think, and the writing in it is very good. And even the side quests are, like, quite funny. And, you know, like, I went on a mission where, you know, I have to basically fight a bunch of Smurfs and, you know, go into that sort of world. So, like, there's lots of really interesting bits in it. And I think, as you know, I was playing it on the PlayStation 5, and it looks really nice. Like, it actually looks, I mean, the cel-shaded style of the game obviously lends a lot to it looking, because it is so stylized. It is, able to do a lot more with what it's got. But, you know, generally I was taking a lot of photos in the world. I'm a big fan of taking screenshots in games, and just really finding some really interesting moments where, you know, the game just looks really pretty, and you're looking at like a really cool sort of fantasy world, and there's lots of those like quite clever design that they've put in to make it feel like a very, you know, like you're inside of a storybook. That's kind of what they were going for. So, you know, things like that have been some quite enjoyable.
I'm going to go out a limb here and say that Borderlands taught everybody what cell shading means. Is that true? Because I think I knew what it meant before I played Borderlands.
I would say there was a game that came out slightly before it, which everyone would probably Maybe not you, because it's maybe slightly before your time. There was a game called 13. Do you ever remember that game, 13? It came out on the PlayStation 2, and it was a comic book. It was designed after a French comic book. So it had that sort of cartoony cel-shading look. But Borderlands was obviously one of the biggest titles to have it. And interestingly, I remember from the original Borderlands marketing, when it first was announced the very first time, it had a more realistic looking style to it.
It didn't look like that. It looked completely different. Yeah.
And then it's been added in, and it's become such a signature of what the game represents. In fact, even, and you'll love this, Mitch, when there was a Borderlands crossover in Fortnite, when Borderlands 3 came out, like they actually made a section of the Fortnite map look cel-shaded as you were walking into it. So, you know, it's a signature of what this game actually has to represent. But I think, you know, especially when you're talking about sort of a fantasy world that looks sort of cartoony in a way anyway, like it really makes a lot of sense for it to look the way that it does. And, you know, the guns look like futuristic guns. Like, you know, some of them have got a few little things welded on the outside of them. They might have a crossbow, little bow part on the front. But, you know, genuinely, I don't think you tend to pay too much attention to what these things look like. But yeah, it runs really nicely. And I found it was, even when it got to quite chaotic amounts of enemies on screen, and, you know, you're throwing spells off everywhere and doing abilities and, you know, all that sort of stuff, it seemed to work particularly nicely. So, you know, it is a one that I think they have really prioritized the next generation, and could be one that could be quite fun for you to pick up if you get the chance to play on a high-end machine or a new console.
I actually think I might go and stop playing it on PS4, and I might go get it on Steam to see how it goes. Epic, sorry. That's where you get it. And I think I might do that because full disclosure, we got provided copies to make content with, but we requested PlayStation copies, which was my call, and I sort of regret that. Not to say that the PlayStation 5 version is not an excellent product, but I just think the PS4 could have been better, considering that games like Horizon Zero Dawn, Forbidden West are pretty excellent on the PS4 still.
They were in this mode. I don't know if you remember, Mitch, when they had the crossover time between any of the consoles, between PS3 PS4, Xbox and Xbox 360. You know, I remember when these things kind of switched across, and there was always, you know, it seems crazy because these consoles came out 2 years ago, right? But we're still sort of in this sort of teething mode where some of the games work really excellently on the new console. Some of them aren't dramatically different, you know, and where it sort of sits is interesting. And, you know, I would say that something like Forbidden West, for example, which is a first-party Sony-owned game, well, they're going to do everything they possibly can to make that look as good as it can on any of the PlayStation consoles, while Borderlands has to come out on everything. Who's this game for?
It's for people who like Borderlands 1, 2, 3, and Handsome Jack Collection. It's for those people. If you like D&D, it may not... It is a love letter to D&D, but that might not be enough. If you only like D&D and you don't like Borderlands, this probably won't cut it for you, I don't think. That being said, it's a good selling point.
I think that's definitely how I would find it as well. It is fully, if you're into the enjoyable loop of collecting new gear, if you're a player of things like, well, Destiny does it now, and Diablo, of course, was one of the earliest examples of this. Something that I think would probably kind of might, if it's not for you, it won't be for you, It is pretty samey, like as you go through every area, right? You know, there is a lot of repetition. You move to an area, you do a few missions, you shoot a bunch of bad guys. That's basically how you progress through most areas. There's not really a lot of puzzle solving or anything like that. You do collect a few items here and there. Certain enemies will drop particular items. You can do that in particular areas, but in the grand scheme of things, if you don't like shooting guns and kind of doing that sort of repeatedly to a number of different enemies, I think you might struggle with this game. If you're someone who's more of a strategic player, what do you think about that?
I wouldn't be inclined to agree with you. I think that you could probably spec a character to not use a gun at all.
Which is cool to think about when you're talking about a Borderlands game, which is all about guns.
Yes, but they have tried this before. There have been characters that were not really that... They could avoid using a gun. They were like melee-based characters. So they have existed in the franchise before, so we're not gonna do the whole bit where it's like that's the fresh and new approach for this game, because it's not. They've existed before. I think there was a psycho character in Borderlands 2, which was very heavily melee orientated, and of course in Borderlands 1 there was Brick, and he had like a big melee ability as well. So it's not like it's pretty much it's been there for a while. So, but that being said, there are like spells and things now, and different melee weapons you can get. They're not just abilities now; you can pick them up.
If you like that sort of loop, just moving through areas, kind of repeating the same tasks, improving your skills and your abilities and kind of doing that, then I think it is quite an enjoyable game. And I think as well, for a lot of people, you know, they're going to play this in as a co-op game, right? Because that you can play
yes,
it as a split screen.
Definitely play it as a co-op game.
Yeah, you can play it in split screen, which is kind of rare now for modern games.
Okay, let's talk about that. I really admire any game now that lets you play co-op split screen.
Yeah, it was cool to see. And pretty much at any time, you can kind of start it up and have a split screen character kind of happening with you. Or, of course, you can play it online as well. And I think, you know, that is the way that most people are going to probably play this game, right? You and your bunch of friends are going to find time to jump into this game. You might have, you know, busy lives and you want to just have a good 30, 40 minutes of fun, or maybe an hour or so, moving through certain areas and repeating certain tasks and things like that. And I think, yeah, honestly, you'll get a lot out of this game. And I think there's some very fun moments to be had when you're playing it with others as well. I think that's one of the best potentials of this. And because it has that really excellent sort of loop mechanic, and there's a lot of randomization, but you can go and, you know, upgrade and change a few things as you get to the final levels. You know, there's enough there to get people to come back. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty mindless. It doesn't ask a lot for you. But if you want to catch up with your mates have a fun time while doing it, then yeah, I think this could be quite an enjoyable game for you. And as well, I think as if you have sort of been turned off a little bit by some of the writing or in the sort of mainstream Borderlands franchise, which Mitch, I think you've told me felt a little bit old-fashioned when it came out, like it hadn't really moved forward at all.
Borderlands 3, everybody was like, oh, has it grown up? And I'm like, no, it is exactly the same. It is the Borderlands 3 was like hanging out with that person that peaked in high school. Like it was they sat there and it's exactly where it was. And it was great because of
Yeah, but I think I would honestly say that I think the writing in this game is very smart. It's quite heartfelt. The relationships between the characters are really good. The only thing I wished is that you actually saw these two characters, Valentine and Fret, in the actual game. They're only kind of like disembodied voices as you play the whole way through. But yeah,
well,
it's quite
metagaming. It's them metagaming through the campaign.
That's, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, Will Arnett does a great job. All the characters in it are really nicely written. It's a very, genuinely written world that feels like, a nice take on the Borderlands format, in a funny and enjoyable, world. And I think, yeah, pick it up, play it with your mates. That's probably where you're going to get the best time out of it, or even play it yourself as I have done. There's plenty to enjoy there.
If anybody uses that co-op split screen mode on PS4, I would like you to send me footage of that.
Or just tell us how it goes.
You can add us. No, I want to see it. I want to see someone do this because it chugs pretty hard when I'm on my own playing it. So I can't imagine what split screen must be like on PS4. So someone send me that footage.
There's your challenge. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, it's out now on PlayStation 4 and 5, on the Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S, and also on PC. We'll say thank you to 2K Australia, who provided us with a code to check out the game and to give it a review.
This is Mainstream.
And so this has been Mainstream by Sifter. It's what video games the Sifter team have been playing during their off time. My name is Mitch, and thanks for being part of the episode, Gianni.
Always a pleasure, Mish.
As always, thanks to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the mainstream theme music, and thanks to Omni Studio for their support of Sifter's 3 podcasts. Sifter is produced by Nicholas Kennedy, Kyle Paletto, Fiona Bartholomeus, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, and my name is Mitch Lowe. I am the senior producer, and joining me again, mentioning Gianni DiGiovanni is our executive producer.
If you want to find us on social media, you can go to @SifterHQ. We're on Twitter, Instagram. You can join us as well on Discord. We've got a really cool weekly sharing of creative works. One of my favorite things. I don't know about you, Mitch. I know you love to see creative works as well. But yeah, we do this thing called Share Saturday. Everyone collects up all the works that they're working out throughout the week, and we give you a little shout out. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, or you'd like to share some screenshots of the game, maybe that that gameplay that you want to see of the split screen on PS4, you can share that in the Sifter Discord. That's sifter.com.au/discord. And that address again is sifter.com.au/discord.
Can I just mention about the sharing thing? We have people sharing all sorts of stuff in there. So I think someone was like laying down floorboards the other day, and that was awesome. So if you think your thing is not worth sharing, it is. Share it. It'll be great. We'd love to
It's very awesome. It's such a great thing.
Speaking of sharing, we have two other podcasts. One is called Lightmap, where we talk to developers, creatives, and other people involved in creating interactive media, and our other podcast, Walkthrough, which is Sifter's weekly recap of the biggest news in video games. Release announcements, controversies, you can see what we think of those, and what games are releasing that week. So you can head to your podcast player of choice and search Sifter. All three of them, all three of these shows pop up, and they're all free. So yeah, check them out.
We've got a website as well. We're putting up a whole bunch of reviews on that. You can find links to all of the stuff that we create on our website. That's sifter.com.au. Articles, short impression pieces, reviews, videos, and much more. You can check it out all in there. And if you like what you heard, you can tell a friend if you reckon they'll enjoy it, because I think your recommendation will make a big difference and it'll actually really help the show. It's one of the free things you can do. If you have a bit of extra money and you want to support independent video game journalism made in Australia, then you can buy a cool Australian-made and Australian-designed video game shirt. That's at sifter.store. There's a bunch of cool designs there. We're adding new ones all the time. Sifter.store. Made in Australia, and will come out to you at a pretty reasonable rate. Or you can head to the Sifter website and click on merch up the top.
Excellent. Well, that's all for this episode of Mainstream. We'll catch you later. Have fun.
Thanks. Bye.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.